Hello, and welcome to Why Make, the podcast where we talk with artists about why they make, with me, your host, Eric Wolkin. If you'd like to learn more about Why Make, please go to our website, why-make.com. Would it not be cool if you could get a card for a library that lent chairs instead of books? Every couple of weeks, you could go to the library, browse the shelves for some new and interesting chair to read in, work, or lounge in, take it home and live with it for a couple of weeks until you returned it and replaced it with another one. Well, no such library like that really exists, but at Salem College in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, there is a chair library, and you can browse and touch and sit in a wide variety of chairs. You just can't borrow one and take it home. The library was created by Dr. Rosa Otero, design professor and architect at the all-women Salem College. It's a teaching library for her design students, and it's also the starting point for an idea that became the exhibition Seating Assignment, Women in Contemporary Chair Making and Craft Education. The exhibition took place from March to May of 2024 at the Sawtooth School for Visual Arts in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And today you'll hear from a number of people who made this one-of-a-kind show possible. But first we need to step back in time because the seed of the idea, even before the chair library, was a chance visit to an exhibit in Philadelphia by the curator of Seating Assignment, wood and fiber artist Rebecca Juliet Dux, AKA Becky. It was called Making a Seat at the Table.
I had heard about the exhibition, and I happened to be visiting some friends in Philly, and on my way out of the city, I remembered that exhibition, and I thought about stopping. It was kind of cold and snowy, and I just wanted to get home, but I checked it out on the map, and it was close, less than 10 minutes from my friend's place. So I decided to stop by. And on that day, I was one of the few visitors there, but I had this really reverent opportunity to take in the work the artist represented there. And it was everything from furniture to installation work, practical to conceptual. And for me at the time, not really knowing too much about the history of women in woodworking and not really knowing too much about what I could do, that exhibition completely changed the trajectory of my woodworking. And it also planted a seed within me that it took a few years, but it did germinate and it did become the Seating Assignment exhibition.
But back to the story of Seating Assignment and the chair library. I went to Salem College and sat down in the chair library with its creator, Dr. Rosa Otero, professor of design, and we discussed why a chair library.
It's a question I get all the time. Why chairs? Well, because we are so intimate with chairs, right? It's the piece of furniture that we spend the most time with. There are chairs for all occasions. There are chairs from very casual moment, but from very formal, and their symbolism. And it's just something that we all can relate, no matter your age, background, religion. You know, just think about St. Peter's throne, or think about the barber chair.
Right. And it is the most human scale piece of furniture. Absolutely. And it's so different than a table or a cabinet, because it's all built to meet our needs in a very specific sort of ergonomic way.
Yeah.
What are the parameters to be in this library? What are the requirements to have a chair occupy a space in this library?
The main criteria to be in this collection is that the piece is in current production. That's one of the main criteria. That we is something that we can still go to the company that carries the right to reproduce them, and we can go and buy them, right? And why is that? Is because If something happens to the chair, we can replace them, right? If they were not right now in current production, that means I'm not sure if I want to take a chance of people sitting on this piece, right? And so that's one part, because it really tells the story that these designs, even though they were 100 years old, they're still relevant and they're still important today. We obviously could have done better in some areas, meaning gender representation. That's one of the areas that we're really working on right now, trying to get some chairs designed by women. As a matter of fact, the one I'm sitting right now, which is my favorite, is designed by Eileen Gray, which is one of the most popular chairs, being at Salem College, being a women's college, that, you know, it does have an important role, an important place in our collection.
So what would you say the overall goal of the chair library is?
Really, it's to promote lifelong learnings. In this case, using the chairs as a vehicle to get people curious about design, just to get people excited about design, innovative work, and perhaps inspire others to continue with the legacy of designing chairs. But really, it has always been from the beginning, lifelong learning. And that idea of inspiring those that are new to the field or already seasoned, so it doesn't really matter. Anybody can come here and have a wow moment, right? Because they're not expecting two rooms in a historic campus full of chairs that they all speak pretty much a modern language.
From the first time Becky experienced the chair library at Salem College and watched students interacting with the chairs, she knew this was a special place. Her visit to the Museum for Art and Wood, combined with the experience of the chair library, lit a spark and led her to Seating Assignment, a vehicle to both inspire and draw attention to chairs designed by women. At the time, Becky was the Gondring resident in the Wood program at the Sawtooth School, and that is what brought her to the Winston-Salem area. Sawtooth is a community-based art center celebrating its 79th year as a multidisciplinary school for visual art and craft, connecting and creating community through the act of making. I met Becky at the exhibition, and we talked as she was sitting in one of the featured chairs, Kim Winkle's wooden row house bench, a colorful bench whose top bears a streetscape of miniature houses. As an artist, what made you want to put on an exhibition? Because it's a real different set of skills.
Mm-hmm. It was not necessarily a conscious decision like you think it might have been. It was sort of just a snowball effect of what happened from that first time that I visited the chair library. And my initial thought about the chair library was what an amazing resource it is for the students. And I got to see a group of students come into the chair library and use it. So they're turning over chairs and they're sitting in them and they're talking about them and they're doing some sketches. And so it was this really vibrant activity that's going on. And that also got me thinking about the students that we met in Dr. Otero's design program. Josie Vogel and I went back and we gave a talk to them about our paths in craft and in design and making. And I just was looking at their faces and thinking about the way that it's hard to see yourself progressing in a field when you don't see your own self represented there.
I think that's interesting, just from what you are saying, is that at least in my 35 years in the field, the representation of women in the studio furniture world has changed incredibly. The chair library is mostly industrial design.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that industrial design is a field, well, I didn't know that much about, but I would say probably historically was all male and is still all male, except for a few historic outliers like Ray Eames and, of course, Eileen Gray,
mm-hmm.
who I think of her absolutely iconic side table, the metal and glass side table, but she was pretty well renowned for her chair design. But again, Charles and Ray Eames and mm-hmm. Eileen Gray were in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
I really actually couldn't name a contemporary woman industrial designer right now.
But here's my thought on that, is that we've been there all along, but just like folks in the BIPOC and the LGBTQ communities, our voices have been silenced, our contributions have been marginalized, but it's not like women just appeared in the field of design and woodworking. Influences have been there all along, but just have not been properly credited.
You were a resident at Sawtooth.
Yes.
How did you get them involved? And Josie Bogle, who is the head of the woodworking program here?
She's the director of wood programs.
Director of wood programs. How did she get involved? And how did Sawtooth get involved? What is their role, other than obviously being the exhibition space as well?
So, well, it wouldn't have happened without an exhibition space also. And I can't think of another place that would have been able to hold the exhibition in this way for us and to be able to organize it and to do all of the work that Rebecca Silberman, the director of operations, and Robert Grand, the director of marketing, have done to make this exhibition a success. Without them on hand, I don't know where we would be. And then without Lauren Davis, the executive director here, who just, when the idea was brought to her, she just said yes. And that's huge to have an institution that will get behind you like that when you have an idea like this. Josie Vogel was on the ground from the very minute we went and saw the chair library together the first time. And then we went back and did a presentation for the students. And so she and I had become really well acquainted with the students at that point. We did a seat weaving class with the students, brought them here to Sawtooth to give them the experience of coming here. So this space has been well integrated in the exhibition from the very beginning.
How did you choose the artists for this exhibition?
Some of the artists have been folks that I have gotten to interact with on my journey. So I've met them through workshops, or I've seen presentations that they've made, or I've listened to their Why Make episodes. And others have just been some that I have seen their work as a woman in woodworking.
Did you give them any marching orders? Did you give them any direction and how they were to create their chairs, or you just said, make a chair?
Well, most of the chairs were already created before the exhibition. There are a few that were created for the exhibitions, but to answer your questions, there were absolutely no marching orders given to them.
So everybody in the show is also an educator, and that was an element of this show?
Correct.
As in stated in the name of it? Mm-hmm. Why was that important?
Because of the missions of Sawtooth and Salem College, it became really important that we wanted folks who were going to maybe be interested in interacting with the students on some level. And the artist-educator piece just seemed to really this dovetail.
This exhibition is set up in a very consciously chosen way.
Yes.
And what is the story behind that?
In my mind, I was always thinking about the dinner party, the Judy Chicago installation that is at the Brooklyn Museum, where she has created a place setting for individual women artists. And the thought of this exhibition was to become the negative space around her table and her place settings. And so we are here currently still today, like pulling up our chairs to that table. And it's all about the conversations that are happening between the chairs themselves and between the artists in this show, and imagining a room just full of the artists that she has also been inspired by. And what would these conversations be?
Somebody comes into this exhibition, they walk through it. What do you want their take-home message to be? What feeling do you want them to leave with?
Well, I want to leave that open-ended a bit, because I do want everyone to feel their own connection to the space, without me dictating what they should feel when they walk in here. But certainly I want the takeaway to be inspiration. If you are a furniture maker, regardless of gender, I think you can walk into this room and appreciate the quality of the work that is in this room. But collected together as all women woodworkers, metal workers, furniture makers, and designers, I think there's a certain gravity and depth to what we're saying in this room, that definitely we're present and we're involved in the world of furniture design, and we're here to support each other and to uplift each other, and not just our own voices, but any other marginalized voices in this community or across craft in general.
Seating assignment covers a lot of territory, both in materials used and techniques. And one of the more uniquely constructed chairs was Elsa Hoffman's steel and concrete Omen chair. It is a piece difficult to describe, but it has this flowing organic form that is as if it almost grew from the ground like a mushroom, which is very much by intent. We visited Elsa at her studio in rural Alamance County, North Carolina, and I talked with her about the elements that brought her chair and the exhibition to life, all while the cicadas roared outside in the large field that surrounds her workshop. So when did you first get interested in mixing the mediums of concrete and steel?
Well, I first learned how to weld, and I think it was 2011. I had met this woman, Krista McGee, that worked at the North Carolina Zoo down in Asheboro. And I went to hang out with her in the exhibit design shop there, where it's one of the only zoos in the country with on-site fabrication of fake rocks and tree limbs and stream beds and polar bear caves. And all of that construction is made out of welded steel armature, which then they direct apply concrete to. So my introduction to welding was also my introduction to sort of three-dimensional steel sculpture. I never really even taken a sculpture class. It was sort of also my introduction to sculpture, of just how to build in three-dimensional space and build up mass kind of quickly. And then the idea of, you know, steel and concrete have been used together for a really long time. They go well together.
What made you want to participate in the chair show and seating assignment?
I had heard word that Becky was curating this show, and I had already started building the chair, this chair. And I had spent all of last year doing large-scale commissions for other people and was sort of feeling like a slave to other people's ideas, and had been dreaming and doodling of this chair for more than a year, and was finally giving myself some freedom of time and energy to finally build the chair. And living in rural North Carolina and working and living by myself, it's pretty isolating. And so I was excited to have an outlet for having kind of a goal for where this chair could be, go out into the public eye and be seen.
Is this the first chair you've ever made?
No, this is sort of a train of thought of a variety of seating elements that I've made in the past 3 years or so. I mean, a long time ago, I took a chair making class at Penland with John Grew Sheridan when I was, I think, 19. And that was my introduction to the concept of ergonomics and seating. And since then, had kind of a long pause of furniture. But then in, I think, 2019 or 2020, I started dreaming of chairs. The first one just literally came to me in a dream. And I woke up in the middle of the night and did a little sketch of it. And then right when I moved to Providence, that was my first big project. And it was right when I was sort of learning more about metal fabrication and integrating it with concrete, and made a series of chairs and a chaise lounge chair, and then started making furniture in more of this style that was more intuitive and rough.
So you have a tendency to go directly to the materials and work, or do you sketch extensively, or?
I mean, I like drawing, but I like, my sketches are extremely crude, just very gestural of sort of a shape and size. This chair, I think I did extremely minimal measuring. It was built very intuitively. I think that's the beauty of working in steel, is that you can just assemble things really quickly. And unlike woodworking, where you have to really plan out your joinery and really be super calculated about it. With at least the way I built this chair, you can build intuitively and sort of make and unmake things and just be very free with it. I feel that I'm often very constricted by technical building skills, and I'm always trying to get myself out of that and be more free with the way I build things, even though this chair was wildly torturous, actually.
Wildly torturous in terms of its building experience, or wildly torturous in its sitting experience?
It's not very comfortable, honestly. This chair is the accumulation of me learning how to do a lot of things, and I've never been formally trained in really woodworking or metalworking, and it's all just been self-imposed learning and self-motivated learning. It was taking me a long time and do a lot of learning by myself, and so every project, I always kind of think of some new things that I want to learn how to do and practice doing, and then sort of set that up for myself. And for this chair, is the first chair I ever incorporated upholstery, which was very challenging. And the first time that I combined the decorative metal cutouts with this sort of meaty sculptural forms.
Exhibitions are ephemeral. They're here and then they're gone. What lasting value they have is the impressions and inspirations they leave the viewer. I asked Becky, the chief instigator for Seating and Assignment, how the exhibition would continue to live on.
In a few amazing ways, at Salem College, this exhibition has inspired the Sutton family, who founded the chair library, to embark on a project with Salem students where they design a Salem chair that is going to go into a limited production. Here at Sawtooth, there have been community connections formed because of the exhibition. The connection between Salem College and Sawtooth, which I think is going to continue to grow, and then the people that come and see the exhibition, I hope that just we're planting a little seed in them, not just the students, but anyone from the community that comes here, that you never know when that seed will be realized and in what form. I could not have known that I would be sitting here talking to you about this exhibition right now without that seed having been planted in me all those years ago.
Some closing thoughts. One could say Seating Assignment is all about planting seeds. Seating Assignment germinated from its origins in the exhibit, Making a Seat at the Table, that Becky saw in Philadelphia, and grew at the chair library at Salem College into Seating Assignment, eventually giving all of us the opportunity of seeing something new, the role of women in the world of furniture making and design. It should also be noted that the curators of Making a Seat at the Table, Deirdre Visser and Laura Mays, also played a role in Seating Assignment, with Deirdre Visser writing an essay for the catalog entitled Permission to Dream, and Laura Mays contributing a chair. This exhibition is available online at sawtooth.org, and I highly recommend that you check it out. There are 15 artists involved in this show, including four of which have done episodes on this podcast: Kim Winkle, Ellie Richard, Aspen Golan, and Wendy Maruyama. The Wendy Maruyama chair in this exhibition, Matador, is a play on her iconic Mickey McIntosh chair, both of which we talked about extensively on her episode of the podcast. I would also suggest, for further enlightenment on women in the woodworking field, to take a look at the recent New York Times article from March of 2025 entitled "Woodworking Loses Its Macho Edge and Embraces New Shapes." For bringing this exhibition to my attention and aiding me in documenting it, thanks are due to Rebecca Silberman, Director of Operations at the Sawtooth Center, Robert Grand, Director of Marketing, Josie Vogel, Director of Woodworking Programs, and Dr. Rosa Otero, the Professor of Design at Salem College. As always, thanks for listening, and why make? Why Make is written, produced, and edited by Eric Wolken. Today's episode was edited with help from Joe Dassault and Johanna Zorn. You can help support the Why Make podcast by going to why-make.com and clicking on the donate button. All donations are tax deductible through our fiscal sponsor, Fractured Atlas. And now for some corrections. My apologies to Rebecca Juliet Dukes for mispronouncing her name. Rebecca Silberman is both Director of Operations and exhibitions at the Sawtooth School for Visual Art, not the Sawtooth Center. And it should also be noted that the Sawtooth School is now entering its 80th year and not 79th, as I had previously mentioned.